Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Boy, Josh, it feels like everybody under the golden sun is getting suspended this week.
Yeah, you have the Brewers pitcher, Will Smith, who was getting suspended for use of pine tar. And now our very own Baltimore Orioles relief pitcher, failed starter, Brian Mattis.
Yes, it has come home, full circle. It is here, and it is affecting Baltimore. The foreign substance accusations that are going against pitchers nowadays. And Brian Mattis is unfortunately no stranger to that. I remember a couple years ago he was kicked out of a game for going to his mouth too much and was being talked about for that. And then you had Will Smith, as you said, just brings up Michael Pineda last year. And then, of course, everybody's still talking about, I don't get how this is still a top topic that people want to talk about, the Deflategate issue, Balghazi, whatever you want to call it, about Tom Brady's suspension. So everybody has been talking about getting suspended. We are not suspended. We are the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, even though sometimes I wish I was suspended because I feel like crap right now. But anyway, this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. You can find us on sfmsports.net, Audio Boom, Spricker, Stitcher. Spreaker, Stitcher.
There you go.
Combine them again like I did last week. And then what are our social media pages there, Josh?
On Facebook, you can find us at the Baltimore Sports Free for All Podcast. If you want to tweet us, retweet us, follow us, you can go on Twitter at BSportsFree to number 4 all. And if you ever want to go on Google or Blogger or both, be sure to check out the Sunday Night Sports Delight, which we've had this week, a Memorial Day edition of the American League East Week in Review. But once that is out of the way and going into next Sunday, the following Sunday's blog, we'll have more content up there sports-wise, not just the American League East. But real quick, Ray, before we start the show, we would like to wish every one of our listeners a happy Memorial Day, but also to keep in mind the remembrance of the freedoms we so cherish.
Yeah, you get that barbecues because people have sacrificed for your freedom. So keep that in mind for Memorial Day weekend, as it's called Memorial Day, not barbecue day.
Yeah, absolutely.
If anybody's supposed to, so to speak. But at the same time, have your barbecues, because that's what freedom is all about, being able to do what you want to do. And since everybody is off, most people are off on Memorial Day. Hey, I actually had off on Memorial Day this weekend. I had really no idea what to do with myself over the weekend, but instead I decided to hang out with friends and do a bunch of other things as well around the house and get things tidied up. Adult problems, so to speak.
Yeah, I pretty much folded clothes and put them away on my Memorial Day. You know, guy stuff that really isn't in the guy rule book that you really want to do, but you do anyway for the sake of self-cleanliness. But yeah, over the weekend, really, just kind of laid back for me. Pretty much checked out the new Mad Max movie, which was pretty good. Also, went to a local establishment where they had the UFC pay-per-view, which was interesting because totally slipped my mind that they had the pay-per-view that night.
Yeah, and we could actually watch it for pretty much a beer.
Yeah, pretty much. And there was no cover charge or anything. I guess they reached their point like, okay, you can come in. It's at the end of the fight, whatever. But yeah, during that whole night, I was watching some of the conference final games. I believe it was the Western Conference final, Game 3. It was Golden State versus Houston. And man, talk about these series real quick in the NBA. How bad are Atlanta's and Houston's manhood getting taken from them? Even in their own court.
By two separate teams where you've got Al Horford's sister like saying, well, at least we don't live in Ohio. Trying to like give like one last parting shot there with the at least. When we start using at least, that's when you start saying to yourself, you have really nothing to say, so why say it at all? Yeah, Al Horford was caught dropping the people's elbow this past weekend, and that pretty much may have signaled the doom for the Atlanta Hawks. This series is probably going to be over within the next few days, and now you're going to see it to where it's going to be Cleveland versus Golden State, and you're going to have it to where it's going to be Steph Curry versus LeBron James. It is the matchup the NBA needs, but not necessarily deserves.
And I will say this in full confidence here, and just swearing on an oath here. if the matchup for the NBA Finals next week, which we'll probably be talking about, we'll be giving our predictions here on the free-for-all. If the NBA Finals in 2015 is not Cleveland versus Golden State, I will eat my own head.
No, that's impossible. You can't even do that in Mortal Kombat X. What are you doing?
That is true.
Molina has to do
that. Okay, I won't go that far, but I will. Okay, I'll eat a piece of paper. Okay, how about that?
Well, paper is technically edible.
Yeah, there
I've known people that have eaten paper and have lived to tell about it.
Yeah, but it's gross.
Yeah, it's bland and tasteless. What are you talking about there?
It's tasteless.
Going on to the ice, on the ponds, though, in the NHL, right now the Blackhawks and the Ducks.
Bruce Boudreau, man.
They're going back and forth with each other. I mean, that double overtime game that they've had was just incredible. I mean, you're looking up and you're seeing to yourself, how is this game not over just yet? And then it ends in typical fashion. I still can't get over that one header goal that I saw about last week as well, and how it did not count, but it should have. It really should have, Josh. Just that one time, they could have just made an exception and be like, okay, it kind of bounced up, and he just bounced the puck in with his head. I mean, can we count that, please?
I still can't get over the fact that Bruce Boudreau is one game away from taking the Tampa Bay Lightning to the Stanley Cup, which proves, once for all, what I've said for many years. NHL teams firing head coaches after 13, 15 games is overrated. Okay, he starts 6-7, 6-8. Oh, we got to fire him. It's terrible. We're two games under 500. Stop it, please. Let's look at all the coaches that went through the Capitals so far. You had Adam Oates. Oh, yeah, that fared out well. You know, it's like Bruce Boudreau was actually a really good coach with Washington, and before they could get red hot and before they could settle in and become a perennial playoff team, they just fire him because of a slow start or because they didn't want to get anywhere. Well, there he goes. Now Bruce Boudreau's one game away from going to the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, he's gotten farther with the Lightning than he's gotten with the Capitals. So, I mean, good for Bruce. I'm happy for the man. So he's up against the Rangers. That series is at 3-2 as of this podcast, and Chicago and Anaheim are tied together. That's going to be one of the ones you look at. I think the winner of that series is going to win
the Western Conference.
Yeah, the Western Conference wins this year, so it's going to be interesting to see. We'll talk about more of that next week on the free-for-all as we give our picks for NBA Finals and NHL Finals, because they always come up at the same time because they seem to have the same schedule that goes on forever. It's like the playoffs are their own separate seasons in both of these sports, where it's just like, how long have they had the playoffs now? It's been quite a while. Whereas the NFL, it's like one and done. Okay, fine. And then MLB is like 1 month, and then that's it. Whereas the NBA and NHL playoffs can last for 2 months.
But we are going to start off this show with the weekend review for the Baltimore Orioles, reviewing the seventh week of baseball action for your Baltimore Birds. Looking at this past week, Ray, before they started off the week, the Orioles were kind of near the cellar, but not completely there. They were in fourth place, about four games back of the American League East leading New York Yankees, but now it's the Tampa Bay Rays that are in the lead. And even though the Orioles games behind have decreased on the stat sheet there in the standings, they certainly have beaten themselves in terms of trying to gain opportunities to move up in a division, because the whole American League East this week, Ray, was completely cold.
Yeah, completely cold. It seemed like it was up for grabs, and yet the Orioles pretty much stayed the same. Didn't really gain much ground, so to speak. And they're hovering in that. They just can't seem to pass it, Josh. They're hovering in the two games under 500 category.
Or two or three games, depending.
But at the same time, they're 20-22 as of this podcast. And they seem to have kind of maintained that where they can make a move, but when are they making the move? It's like Game of Thrones. When are the dragons coming? You know, you're just thinking to yourself, when are they getting the fireworks factory?
Yeah. But there were some fireworks for the Orioles in their opening game against the Seattle Mariners, which was on Tuesday, May 19th at Oriole Park at Camden Yards.
Oh, was that game splendid, delightful, and everything else like that, even though Nelson Cruz went yard and everyone was like, see, we should have kept Nelson Cruz. Hang on.
Should have kept Nelson Cruz.
Can it?
He's going to go to the Mariners. Wait, what? He's going to go to the Mariners. Like, oh, okay, aren't you Nostradamus? But yeah, your winner of that game was Miguel Gonzalez, who improved to 5-2. The loser was Farquhar of the Mariners.
Farquhar?
Farquhar.
You know, the bad guy in Shrek?
No.
The guy who comes in short supply?
Not that guy.
There are those who think little of him?
Well, Farquhar was your loser who went to 0-2.
Damn, we're harping on the guy.
We are harping
on
the guy.
He was the loser.
He was the loser. Offensively for your Baltimore Orioles, Jimmy Paredes, who we've always called him the bright spot. That should be his nickname here on the show. Jimmy the bright spot Paredes, because it seems like whenever we bring up a game in the box score, he's always the lone bright spot offensively for this team.
I mean, he does lead the team in average, so
yeah, he's
got that going for him.
He actually can, you know, he actually is now a credible candidate for the batting average stat in the American League. You know, in the American League stats standings there.
Yeah, you're trying to think of a better way to come up with that. Yeah, he's currently hitting 336 right now, Josh, in 31 games and 128 at bats. I mean, the guy is pretty much, you know, arrived on the scene this year, and it's quite a sight to behold for Jimmy Paredes, to where he's getting national attention and people are talking about the guy. Could very well be a steal, so to speak, for Jimmy Paredes if he turns out okay.
Paredes went 2-for-5, drove in 4 RBIs, which were added up to 22 total, you know, during this game. Also smacked in his 6th home run of the season. Also for the Orioles, Steve Pierce, who played second base in this game, went 2-for-4. We're still waiting for Jonathan Scope to come back. But anyway, Steve Pierce went 2-for-4, drove in an RBI, which was his 11th of the season. Caleb Joseph went 2-for-4, drove in 2 RBIs, which added up to 14 on the year. Also got a double, his 5th. And for the Orioles, Miguel Gonzalez, who is your winning pitcher, had 7 innings, gave up 4 earned runs off 5 hits, had 2 walks, 2 home runs allowed, but had 8 strikeouts.
8 strikeouts was the key stat in that game.
Not necessarily a candidate for a quality start, but in a game where you're competing against the American League leader in home runs and RBIs, you'll take 4 earned runs in 7 innings and 8 strikeouts any day of the week.
That you will. I mean, yeah, Nelson Cruz had belted his 16th home run this game. Everyone was like, hey, welcome back to Camden Yards there, Nelly. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you missed it. But everything else was going hunky-dory. Hey, did you give any credit to Alejandro Diaz in this game?
Alejandro Diaz, you know what? Yeah, come to think of it, I actually do have to give him a little bit of credit, don't I? Because he actually had a solid game offensively for once. Alejandro Diaz in this game, who played in right field, went 3-for-3 and scored 2 runs there.
How'd you miss that? And he had a walk.
I guess I look at the RBIs and everything, and yeah, I guess I don't expect much out of Diaz because we're waiting for that right field, left field prospect to come out of either AA Bowie or AAA Norfolk. So yeah, so fault me for not mentioning Alejandro Diaz and his 3-for-3 performance with 2 runs. Now the next game for the Baltimore Orioles, which took place on Wednesday, May 20th, they had a very disappointing game. Was competitive in the 9th, but unfortunately fell to the Mariners 4-2. Elias was your winner, who improved to 1-1. Wei-Yan Chen went 1-3, and who was the loser in this game? 1-3. Fernando Rodney collected a save, his 12th of the season. And this was just simply a game of the Orioles not taking advantage offensively, even though the starting pitching was pretty much the same as the night before. Offensively, they just couldn't come through.
Yeah, I think Chen deserved a little bit of a better fate if you allow 4 runs over 7 innings. I mean, it's not good, but at the end of the day, it's not bad. But when you only score 2 runs, you're not winning many ball games for the Baltimore Orioles. And one thing of note that really sticks out is Chris Davis striking out 2 times in 4 at-bats. Seems like that's becoming more and more of a trend for him, because he's getting close to that 50% ratio where he strikes out 50% of the time he's at bat. I mean, the guy right now has 62 strikeouts and about 140 at-bats. He is getting close, Josh. He's getting close to striking out 50% of the time.
Well, let's look at pitching first before we look at offense here. Wei-Yan Chen, who was a loser in this game, had 7 innings, same as Miguel Gonzalez the night before, 4 earned runs off 8 hits, gave up a home run, had no walks and 4 strikeouts. So, yeah, you are right. Even though he did give up 4 earned runs in 7 innings, which, once again, is not a quality start according to Major League standards, still deserved a better fate considering he hung in there and competed against a potent offense in the Mariners. Now, looking at the Orioles' offense, Adam Jones went 3-for-4, scored a run. Manny Machado went 2-for-4. Jimmy Paredes went 1-for-4, knocked in an RBI. And J.J. Hardy went 1-for-4, knocked in an RBI, which were the 2 lone runs in the game. And again, this is just simply the Orioles not taking enough pitches here in the game, possibly looking at Chris Davis, who took 21 pitches in 4 at-bats. if you're the first baseman or if you're cleaning, if you're hitting in the fourth or fifth hole, you really need to be hitting more than 21 pitches in four at bats. You want that up there. You want it up there at 28 or 29. You want long at bats. You want to make the pitcher fight for it, because if the pitcher is only averaging five pitches against you, you're going to be a quick out, so to speak.
Yeah, and you're making that pitcher last a little bit longer than what he should, because all in all, it's about getting to the starter early and fast and getting them off their game and get it to a point where you can get to the bullpen a little quicker.
One thing to note of, though, the Orioles did call up a minor league pitcher to come in. We also brought him up last week on our show. Tyler Wilson, who was called up in exchange for, I believe it might have been Flaherty that was called on the DL and Wilson got brought up. But anyway, Tyler Wilson was brought up from AAA Norfolk and pitched a scoreless inning, even though he gave up two hits. So pitched a scoreless inning against the Seattle Mariners. So, yeah, it was a tough night for the Baltimore Orioles on that Wednesday night. However, the Orioles did salvage a series win in the longest way possible. So moving to the Thursday, May 21st game against the Mariners in the rubber match.
Back to Farquhar.
Back to Farquhar, yeah. Tommy Hunter was your winner, improved to 2-1. Farquhar was the loser. He is the loser. 0-3. Zach Britton collected his 11th save of the season. And, Ray, let's talk about the length of this game. Normally, people will look at the time of play in Major League Baseball and how it needs to decrease, how we need to get beyond, we need to get under 3 hours. Well, when you look at your stat sheet there and you don't necessarily put in the time of play, the game time, okay, was 3 hours and 30 minutes, I should say. So, yeah, that doesn't include the 2-hour-plus rain delay, which made it seem like you were watching the entire Godfather trilogy at that point.
Or you were watching all three Lord of the Rings films, extended editions, in one sitting. Or still want to put that on the bucket list, by the way. Just have one day just set aside where we do back-to-back-to-back-to-back, and that would just take the better part of the day. This game took the better part of the day because of the rain delay you had to go. Well, I mean, what are you doing during that 2-hour rain delay, though, Josh? I mean, you're doing other things, right? I hope. You're not just watching, you know, Masson's going to ESPN News, are you?
No, not necessarily.
You're not sitting in anticipation next to TV being like, when are they getting back to the game?
I was necessarily thinking, when are they going to put Chris Tillman back in? Because he was actually on pace to have a quality start. In this matchup here, Chris Tillman, he had 3 innings pitched, 1 run off 1 hit, 3 walks and 2 strikeouts, a Tillman-like performance on a good day. But unfortunately, due to Major League rule, and I guess this is one of these unwritten rules in baseball, if a rain delay is going on longer than an hour and a half, you don't want your starting pitcher to get too cold and put him back out there after a long rain delay. So they did have to sit Tillman down, and they relied mostly on their bullpen here.
Yeah, they brought in not only Brian Mattis, but Brad Brock, TJ McFarland, Darren O'Day, Tommy Hunter, Zach Britton.
Yeah.
So you had all your regular guys come out of the bullpen. Had to stretch it a little bit on that game because of the 2-hour rain delay. Rain delays definitely hurt the pitching staff because, yeah, you can't really bring in the starter after being cold for that long. So you got to bring in somebody else with the crash and everything that's going on right there. But Brian Mattis, let's see, 2 earned runs. He continued to perform up to Brian Mattis standards that we've seen this year in that game. So he wasn't too much help. But Brad Brock, though, 2 innings. 2 scoreless. I mean, he delivered with 3 strikeouts. I mean, can't really bust on Brad Brock too much for that performance. TJ McFarland, he came in not so well. Two hits. And then eventually O'Day, what did he had? He had about 1 inning and just 1 hit over the course of that inning. So,
and he was credited with the blown save there, which I think should have went to McFarland by rule of thumb. But
yeah. Tommy Hunter was the one that was eventually given the win. I mean, yeah, Darren O'Day had to inherit a terrible situation from TJ McFarland, but he got out of it the way you would hope that he would get out of it, and with the way that it was set up and what he was given. I mean, come on. I mean, he kept the damage to a minimum to the point where it was an extra innings. He gave his team a chance to win, other than not, like, you know, giving up the ghost with the bases loaded and giving up more runs that he did in that situation.
Now, before the lengthy rain delay during the process of the game, the Orioles offense was off to a hot start in the first inning as one Steve Pierce. Nope, not you. Not you. You. Once again, playing second base, went 1-for-3, and in the first inning, hit a grand salami driving in four runs.
His first career Grand Slam,
first
by the way.
First career Grand Slam.
So congratulations to Steve Pierce, one guy that we thought was written off the roster last year. We forgot he was even here, and then all of a sudden comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely. But since that Grand Slam there, the Orioles just couldn't seem to muster up much offense during the whole process of the game. You've had several outings here where you would get runners on with base on balls or a single, because other than that Steve Pierce home run, there weren't many extra base hits, none at all. It was just all singles and walks and just relying on small ball.
There was a key stat, though.
What's that?
Chris Davis didn't have a strikeout.
Chris Davis didn't have a strikeout. Went 1-for-2, scored 2 runs, actually got a base on balls.
He went 1-for-3, but...
Oh, did I say 1-for-2?
Yeah, yeah, it's 1-for-3.
I'm looking at the 2 runs. I'm sorry. 1-for-3 and scored 2 runs and had a base on balls. Let's see who else here. Jimmy Paredes went 1-for-3, scored a run, had a base on balls as well, no strikeouts. Adam Jones went 0-for-4, had a strikeout, but that's okay. It's just one. It's just one strikeout.
He gets a pass.
He's getting a pass for now.
Yeah, he's hitting over 300, so he's fine.
Yeah. J.J. Hardy drove in the game-winning RBI in the bottom of the 8th inning, went 1-for-4, and sort of hovering the Mendoza line at this point, but we're hoping J.J. Hardy certainly gets back on track offensively. Once again, your winner was Hunter, went 2-1, had a scoreless inning. Zach Britton collected his 9th save of the season and had 2 strikeouts in that game. So, yes, the Orioles take 2 out of 3 against the Seattle Mariners, and you go to South Beach thinking, okay, we're playing the basement-dwelling Miami Marlins of the NL East. How bad could it get? Well, it...
Well, we didn't see it in the first game.
Not in the first game at all. Well, let's bring up the first game. The Orioles did win on Friday night against the Miami Marlins 8-5. And in this game, once again, this was all just offense, offense, offense. In the game, there were no home runs by the Orioles, but there were some doubles here. You had...
Manny Machado was the guy delivered in that night.
2-for-4, had 3 runs batted in. Also had his 9th double of the season. Jimmy Paredes went 3-for-5, drove in an RBI as well. Delmon Young also had a pinch. Did he have a pinch hit? I don't see him. Where is he? Yeah, but he had a pinch hit RBI, drove in his 11th of the season there. And also, Caleb Joseph, 3-for-4, drove in 2 RBI, scored 2 runs. And looking at the pitching line here for the Baltimore Orioles, Ubaldo Jimenez was on his way to a quality start until they pulled him out before the 5th inning. So 4 innings pitched, 3 earned runs off 7 hits, 4 strikeouts, 1 walk for 1 Jimenez. And Tyler Wilson, who was called up not too long ago, collected his first major league win of his career. Granted, he did give up 1 earned run off of 3 hits in 1 inning.
Like I said, what about wins and losses for a pitcher?
Yeah, they're the most overrated stat in all of baseball. We've heard it many times from you, Ray Atkinson.
Yes, Tommy Hunter also 2 innings, and he went scoreless. So that's a good thing for Hunter.
He actually has been improving in the
bullpen.
He's been
improving away from the home run Hunter moniker, so to speak, that he's had. Brad Brock comes in an inning in 2/3 and only gives up 1 earned run. So I guess you could say that he had kind of a decent amount of bullpen time that was out there. Zach Britton getting his 10th save, though.
Yep, absolutely. So the 8-5 Orioles win this past Friday night on May the 22nd. Tyler Wilson was your winner, improved to 1-0. Alvarez, the loser, 0-4. Britton collecting his 10th save of the season. Now, moving on to the Saturday, May the 23rd game, where, once again, it was another long night for the Baltimore Orioles.
It was a long night for Brian Mattis after he got in that dugout, because this was the infamous game here. But more on that a little bit later right now, because the Orioles lose this game 1-0 to the Miami Marlins in 13 innings. And you're thinking to yourself, who wants this game more? And you're looking at the way the Marlins were playing in the 13th inning and how they were giving it up a little bit. You're saying, well, this is how bad teams find a way to lose and good teams find a way to win. No, it wasn't, so to speak. The bad team found a way to win, and that's exactly what they did. And the Marlins entering into this game had a losing streak, and they snapped it just with the way they played against the Orioles. 1-0 was kind of a suitable score here, because just a game that just felt like it dragged for a 1-0 game, just completely dragged, 13-inning affair. And then you see where offense was abound, so to speak. Machado 2-for-6, Paredes 2-for-6, Jones 1-for-6.
Travis Snyder 2-for-2 also had a walk as well.
How about this, though? Since I gave him credit earlier, now I got a bust on him. Chris Davis, 0-for-6.
Golden Sombrero.
4 strikeouts.
Golden Sombrero. Also, even though he looked like the anti-Chris Davis in terms of not necessarily getting a hit, but getting on base, Caleb Joseph went 0 for 3 and had 2 base on balls. But, Ray, those 2 base on balls only counted for 2 of the 3 base on balls the entire Orioles team had. 9 for 45, the Baltimore Orioles went offensively in the at-bats. They had 3 base on balls, 15 strikeouts.
And they left 10 on base.
10 on base.
1 for 10 with runners in scoring position. That's a... not going to get it done against a bad team like the Miami Marlins. Bad Orioles, bad. You got to be able to beat a team like the Marlins. You got to be able to beat a team like the Mets. You can't just come out at the end of the game and say, "Oh, well, they're better than what they play." I mean, they're a better team than that. I mean, look, whatever it is, they were 16-27 going into this game. They stink. They suck.
They
beat them.
Stink. But, yeah, you look at the pitching line here. Caps was your winner for the Marlins, improved to 1-0. The loser was T.J. McFarland, who goes to 0-1. But looking at the Orioles starting pitcher for this game, Mike Wright making his second major league start.
And it was a waste of a Mike Wright start.
It absolutely was. But let's talk about the start real quick, since it seems like the bright spot in the loss. Is it safe to say that with another performance of 7 scoreless innings, 4 strikeouts, 3 walks, 3 hits... is it safe to say that Mike Wright is entering badass territory?
Could be entering Oral Hershiser territory with consecutive scoreless innings, and he does that to start his career.
That's a good comparison there.
How about that for Mike Wright there? Because this kid, if he continues to deliver, I hate to say it, bye-bye, Bud Norris.
Yeah.
Because who else are you supplanting right there? I mean, maybe Wei-Yin Chen next year, since he's a Scott Boras client. If he continues to perform, then he's going to become priced out of the Orioles' price range, whatever the Orioles' price range might be with Masson deals and everything like that.
They need to get rid of the Boras clients and go more towards the Joe Linta clients or... oh, never mind, that's a totally different sport. But
Go with maybe go with a different... an agent, like, go Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, go Jerry Maguire, the guy who works for his money. But, yeah, making his major league debut was Oliver Drake, who had 3 scoreless innings pitched for the Orioles, gave up 2 hits, but had 2 strikeouts as well. So, good on Oliver Drake to make his first appearance of 2015 with the Baltimore Orioles, and in long fashion, nonetheless. Brian Mattis was the story of this game, however, in the later innings, where... he pitched 2 1/3 scoreless, had a strikeout.
Quick outs, too, by the way, but there was a reason for that.
But got caught. He got caught using a foreign substance on his arm.
They haven't identified what the foreign substance is. They just say, foreign substance, you're suspended for 8 games. Mattis plans to appeal, and while he is appealing, he is subject to be able to play. But let's just face it right here. This 8-game suspension is actually doing the Baltimore Orioles a favor because, I mean, Brian Mattis, we can talk about this.
He can only get lefties out.
And as of right now, Brian Mattis, I have to say, this guy's been a huge bust because he had so much hype coming up. I want to say that this suspension might mean the beginning of the end for Brian Mattis as a Baltimore Oriole, because here you had this guy with so much hype going behind him. He, along with Jake Arrieta, along with Chris Tillman, along with a bunch of other guys, Zach Britton, Troy Patton, and a bunch of other young starters, they were the ones who were supposed to be the ones who turned it around for the Baltimore Orioles under Andy McPhail. And they came up with Matt Wieters, so they would be catching behind Wieters. They would be pitching to Matt Wieters, and they were thinking, okay, well, this is a recipe for success, right? Well, out of all those names that I've just mentioned, Chris Tillman is the only one who is left over from that young prodigy movement that the Orioles had, who is still a starter for the Baltimore Orioles. Everybody else is either bullpen with another team or gone.
Yeah, I know we're supposed to save the subject for Mattis, but we might as well hit it while the note's hot here. I've heard it many times in all of sports, especially Major League Baseball. You know, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. It's only cheating if you get caught, et cetera, et cetera. But is it safe to say that, you know, you look at the managers, Freddie Gonzalez of the Atlanta Braves caught Will Smith of the Brewers with a foreign substance, and you have many sports writers saying, did Gonzalez break an unwritten rule in the handbook? You know, did the Marlins manager break an unwritten rule in the handbook? Yeah, forgive me for not knowing the guy's name. He just got hired. I know he was a general manager. He was a suit. But, yeah, he who caught Brian Mattis with the foreign substance on his arm this past Saturday night. Do I really care about unwritten rules in baseball? I really don't.
I really don't care about the unwritten rules. If you're cheating, you're cheating. If you get caught, that's your fault.
If you get caught, it's out of stupidity. It's out of sheer stupidity. If you don't get caught, hey, God bless you. Whatever works for you, great. But Brian Mattis got caught, pure and simple, and now he has to face the consequences.
I mean, did you notice that Buck Showalter, when they were confronting Brian Mattis, I mean, he came out to say, what's going on with the guys? But he didn't really put up much of a fight. You weren't seeing much gesturing, and Mattis was just walking out with his head held high by saying, yeah, you know, I did it. Oh, well.
Yeah,
this is probably the end of me as an Orioles reliever anyway, so why as well not? I mean, I've sucked all year. I looked for an edge. I got the edge, and I was pretty decent for a little bit, but now I've been caught, and yeah. So Brian Mattis, he is definitely a failed starter, because that's what a lot of relief pitchers are in baseball. They're failed starters. Zach Britton is a failed starter, but at least he's found success in the bullpen. Brian Mattis, for the longest time, did find success, but it seems like ever since that 2012 playoff series against the Yankees, when he was giving it up to Raul Ibanez along with everybody else, he just hasn't been the same since he got rocked and kind of had a mediocre year last year, but this year he's completely sucked. So now with Brian Mattis seems to be out the door, you have to say to yourself, huh, what could have been with this guy? What could have been with Jake Arrieta? What could have been with Brad Bergeson, Zach Britton, Troy Patton, Matt Hobgood? All of these guys that were part of the youth movement for the Orioles, and it seems like only one of them has panned out, and that is Chris Tillman. So you have to say to yourself, everybody was hyping these guys like crazy in 2007, 2008. And then eventually when they come up, everybody's all excited. It's like, yes. And then you got Matt Wieters, yes. And then you get Adam Jones with his trade that he got from Seattle with Eric Bedard. You get Chris Tillman and Adam Jones. You're like, okay, the Orioles have something in place here. And they did have something in place here. They've built up a decent amount of depth in the minor league system. But it seems like they brought up all of these guys at once and expected them to do something, but then when they brought them up, they coddled them, they put pacifiers in their mouth, they protected them to the point where they were just like, okay, you got to be protected. And lo and behold, only one of those guys has been successful, and that's Chris Tillman. So I have to say Brian Mattis is a failure, and I'm going to go ahead and just say that right then and there while the guy's been suspended. He is a failure.
Would you say this was, I know we still have the Sunday game to go to look forward to and the Monday game on Memorial Day to talk about, but would you say that this could not have been an even more perfect time to bring up the likes of Mike Wright, Oliver Drake, Tyler Wilson, and Chaz Rowe from the minors? Because those seem to be guys who are giving new life to the bullpen. You know, as of recent, we don't know what's going to happen in the next 10 games. Maybe one of them will suck and get sent down. We won't know. But for now, it seems to be like a breath of fresh air in a bullpen that needs to be reinvigorated.
Yeah, and these guys have no hype surrounding them. Nobody really, when they got called up, was like, okay, well, Chaz Rowe, okay. Oliver Drake, fine. Who's he? Mike Wright, who's this kid? Oh, that's who that kid is. Wow, okay, well, we'll go with that. But none of them had the hype surrounding them that Mattis and everybody else had around them. So I'm interested to see what these kids can do. It's quite exciting right now to see what Mike Wright can do, because it makes that starting rotation and what the Orioles are going to do with it very interesting, and what they want to do with that as well. Hey, Dan Duquette, if I were you, I wouldn't have one foot out the door this offseason. Find something to do here, because you've got an interesting situation behind your belt where finding your fifth starter is about finding your fifth starter, because who's good enough to do it, not who's just slightly not so bad, like Adam Eaton, like one of those years.
Or Kevin Millwood.
Yeah, come on. You've got a decent situation around your belt. Stick around there, Duquette. But if not, if you got one foot out the door, as I always said, let him go.
Yeah. Now, talking about something that's underwhelming for the Baltimore Orioles, considering the Brian Mattis news was underwhelming in terms of the bullpen, the Miami Marlins ended up winning the series in the rubber match against the Baltimore Orioles 5-2 on Sunday, May the 24th. Kohler was your winner, who improved to 3-3. Miguel Gonzalez was the loser in the game, and his record 5-3. Ramos collected a save, his second of the year for the Marlins. Looking at the stat line for the pitchers here, Gonzalez was just off. He was just off completely. 5 earned runs off 10 hits, had 3 base on balls, 2 strikeouts, and gave up 1 home run. His ERA inflated to 3.83. I know that Gonzalez, Chen, and Jimenez have been the key cogs in the machine that is the Orioles starting rotation as of now, but you think it was just a bad day for Gonzalez, or do you think this is something that may or may not fester in the next couple starts for him?
Well, you've had Gonzalez, who had that, he kind of deserved a better fate in the previous start that he had, but at the same time, it wasn't a quality start, so to speak. Then you have this
start.
But
he got the win.
You have this start, though, where he only went 4 innings, 10 hits, 5 earned runs, 3 walks, and he allowed a home run. You're like, wow. Meanwhile, on the other side, Tom Kohler, I mean, he, I think he went like four innings before he even allowed a base runner, a hit.
He was actually pitching no-hit baseball, I believe, into the third or fourth inning there. And then he gave up his first base on balls, and he also gave up his first hit. Three hits and four base on balls. You know, that's going to equate to seven base runners there. But at the end of the day, though, Gonzalez, it just wasn't his day. And you look at the rest of the bullpen, though. Brian Mattis, who has yet to serve a suspension, did get two scoreless innings. Chaz Rowe, who made his major league debut for the Baltimore Orioles, had two scoreless innings and had two strikeouts. So a nice prospect to see for the Orioles just come up and get some scoreless innings of work there. Now, looking at the Orioles offensively, not much to write home about. David Lowe went 2-for-4 in the game, didn't really get any RBIs or runs.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, Manny Machado went 1-for-4 and got in two runs scored.
I will say this, though, Chris Davis, only one strikeout.
And Chris Davis got an RBI as well and a base on ball. So
only one strikeout.
Yep, and Everett Cabrera went 1-for-2, got two base on balls. Adam Jones, who always hits on Sundays, went 1-for-4. But other than that, that's it, Ray. Other than that, that is it. There were only two RBIs in the game, and it just wasn't enough against the Marlins. So
they got no hits from their pinch hitters, by the way, that they brought in. They brought in Delmon Young to pinch hit for Alejandro Deaza, and he couldn't really do. He got a walk, but that was pretty much it. And then you had Snyder, Pierce, and Caleb Joseph all hitting for the pitching position, but neither one of them could really get anything done. And now you have it to where they lost a series to the Miami Marlins. They lost a series to New York Mets. These are teams you need to beat.
Well, let's go back on the Mets for a second, because at least the Mets are a competitive ball club. And plus, two-game sweeps necessarily aren't the worst thing to happen.
Not the worst, especially.
Four-game sweeps are more damning than two-game sweeps.
Yeah, those are pretty bad. But in terms of, you know, it's the Mets, it's the Marlins, beat them. Now, the Astros, I mean, yeah, they were the Lastros at one point.
Not anymore.
Now, oh my goodness, these aren't your older brother's Astros that the Orioles are playing right now. These are something else. But, the Orioles beat them on Monday on Memorial Day. How about that? 4-3.
Yep, Brad Brock was your winner of that game, improved to 2-0. Keuchel, who lost his first game of the season, drops to 6-1. Zach Britton picking up his 11th save of the season. And Keuchel, by the way, for the Astros, who's just been phenomenal all year, had a complete game loss, Ray.
A complete game loss.
Those are crushing.
Those are kind of crushing, but at the same time, though, it's still a very good performance. I'll take that from Keuchel. Save your bullpen.
Yeah, absolutely. But looking at the Orioles side here, Wei-Yin Chen had five innings pitched, gave up three earned runs off 11 hits.
The guy has the coolest name anyway. Dallas Keuchel.
Yeah.
He Dallas Keuchel, and he pitches for Houston.
Wei-Yin Chen's a catchy name too, but of course, I guess people were saying that 3 years ago, right? I guess he's sort of lost that flavor now. He's just a starter.
Still pretty decent, though.
Still pretty decent. Well, five innings pitch for Wei-Yin Chen, who started the game. Three earned runs off 11 hits, six strikeouts, one home run allowed. And when you have 91 pitches and 60 of them are strikes, it's really going to get you the hook real quick in Buck Showalter's eyes. Chen was just one of those Orioles starters that just didn't have it this week, even in a competitive game against an Astros team that is up to this point, as of this podcast, is a really good team out of the American League West.
At the same time, though, the bullpen held them up, and that's the key thing that is pretty much 2012 to 2014 Baltimore Orioles style right there, is the bullpen. Brad Brock, two innings, kept it together. He had the win. Oliver Drake had a hold. I mean, one inning. And Britton, get your 11th save? Yeah, the bullpen held up pretty well for one Wei-Yin Chen, who had to make an early exit in the fifth inning.
And by the way, Brock, Drake, and Britton all combined here. Six total strikeouts, no base on balls, no hits allowed. Did not allow a base runner. When three of your guys can come through after the fifth inning and put up that kind of performance, Ray, it will usually equate to a pretty solid win in the end.
That's the Orioles bullpen that we know.
Yep. And this game, once again, was dictated by home runs offensively for your Baltimore Orioles, as Delmon Young went 2-for-4, scored two runs. Steve Pierce, once again, getting some home run action, went 1-for-3, drove in two RBIs, scored a run.
Uh-oh, could he be finding himself, Josh?
Fifth home run of the season. This is the fifth home run of the season. Caleb Joseph, who may end up playing every 2 days here and there when Matt Wieters returns in June, went 1-for-3, hit his fourth home run of the season, drove in two RBIs, scored a run. And Manny Machado went 1-for-3 and had a base on balls. Davis, by the way, had no at-bat in the game at all.
Not in the lineup, but he had no strikeouts.
No strikeouts. That's right. So, yes, when you look at the week in review for the Orioles, they went 4-3 in the entire Memorial Day week or weekend. But you do have a whole plethora of games, I should say, coming up here. You do have the remaining two games against the Houston Astros, and folks, do not take them lightly. They are a very solid hitting, very solid pitching ball club.
Plus, you got a doubleheader on Thursday with the
White
Sox.
That is right, yeah.
To make up for the games that were postponed due to the rioting going on in Baltimore. Plus, the Tampa Bay Rays are in town, so there's your chance to make some ground in the division.
Absolutely. And then on Sunday, our ticket winners will be going to that game as well, so hopefully they will be bringing home a win. 8 games played this week by the Baltimore Orioles. Can they do it? Can they at least get 6 out of 8? Can they at least get 5 out of 8? We will not find out until next week's episode.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Well, things could get a little bit more interesting in the NFL this year, considering the fact that they have made the rule change they've been trying to make for the last 4 years, and that is moving the extra point back about 15 yards for the kick, and it's still at the 2-yard line for a 2-point conversion, but now, on a failed attempt, it can be returned by the defense for 2 points of their own.
You know what bothers me about this rule change here? It's not necessarily the fact that it needed to be changed, because, let's face it, the NFL does need to change up here and there as the times go on for the sport. But what gets me about this rule change is that they want to move it to the 15-yard line, where the success rate for your average field goal kicker is a little bit over 90%. So it's not that much of a percentile change there.
Last year it was 99.3% of extra points were successful.
Yeah. So 999 times out of 1,000, you are bound to miss one in your career as an NFL kicker. Even the good ones will miss at least 3 out of 1,000 tries there for extra points. But I guess this is Roger Goodell's answer here for everybody saying, well, the NFL is nothing but an offensive league and yada, yada, yada. I really don't think it's going to change a hell of a whole lot offensively when you look at the scores there. I think if you get rid of an extra point, if one extra point is missed, then everyone can say, well, the rule works because, look, it changed the outcome of one game. It changed the outcome of another game. I don't know there, Ray. I just don't see it there.
I don't think it's going to affect it that much, because considering the fact that it's moving it to the 15-yard line, making it a 30-yard field goal, the problem with that, though, is that from that distance, 96%. You're only dropping it by 3 percentage points. There's not much being changed here.
Well, according to the competition committee's proposal here, not only would the extra point be moved back to the 15-yard line, but the 2-point conversions will remain at the 2-yard line. Now, get this here, because now we're implementing the old college rules here into the 2-point conversions. According to the rule change, if the defense returns a blocked extra point or failed 2-point try for a touchdown, i.e. on an interception — why it doesn't say i.e. on an interception / fumble recovery is beyond me. But
yeah, you can do it on a fumble recovery, you can do it on an interception.
Yep.
Or a blocked field goal, as you said.
They will be awarded 2 points. Under the previous rule, the ball was dead on a failed try.
Yeah, that would make it a little more interesting, but how often do you see it to where on a failed 2-point conversion attempt do you see a fumble or an interception? Not often as not. Usually somebody just gets stuffed at the 1-yard line and everything like that. I was more of a fan of making the field goals, the extra points, maybe 40 yards. Or, no, wait. Either make them 40 yards or move the 2-point conversion to the 1-yard line. That might make it a little bit more interesting, but at the same time, don't have either or, because the whole point of an extra point is to either make it an automatic thing to where you either take the one guaranteed point or you go for the gamble and go for two, which doesn't really happen that often in the NFL to the point where you want it to, it's going to make that significant of a difference. I mean, it's just one facet of the game that felt like needed to be changed just for the sake of changing it. And while it would make it a little more interesting if it was implemented a little better, it really isn't going to change it that much in, you know, my eyes. It's not as bad as moving it, though, the kickoffs, you know, to the 35-yard line and make it to where kickoffs are pretty much irrelevant at this point. I mean, the kickoff is becoming one of the more boring parts of the television aspect of the game, as opposed to the commercials. I mean, come on, let's just face it. When you're taking a commercial break every 2 minutes for, like, you know, because somebody needs to tie their shoes or on-field timeouts and everything else of the like, that, to me, kind of hurts the television product as well. But kickoffs, especially when they just kick it off and the guy just catches it in the end zone, boring. I mean, I like to see big kickoff returns, or I like to see none. Maybe start at the 35-yard line, just call it a day. Yeah, kickoffs are a part of the game. They should be a part of the game. But they were a part of the game when you're allowed to kick off from the 30-yard line. 5 yards more for a professional football kicker? Not so much.
I do think two-point conversions should be moved back just a tad, maybe to the 5-yard line, maybe to the 10-yard line. At least give the defense some space to work so they have a good chance of stopping a two-point conversion. Or if you want to try a kick for a two-point conversion, feel more than free to move it to the 40-yard line or the 23-yard line.
I've got an extra incentive if you do that. If you move it back to the 5-yard line or the 10-yard line, allow time to go off the clock.
Yeah.
That way it even makes it even more strategic to where you're just saying to yourself, huh, do I want
to
eat off this time to go for a point that may or may not work?
Yeah.
Or do I just go ahead and just kick it and just take the 1 point and hope that it goes? 99.3% of the time it worked at the 2-yard line. Now let's see what it does at the 15-yard line. Really, it's not going to change much. If you see, you might see one or two more misses this year in terms of all the teams combined. But in terms of it actually making a big difference, I don't really see it that much.
All right, well, since this is the Baltimore Sports free-for-all, we do discuss Baltimore sports. We do have to bring up Baltimore Ravens kicker Justin Tucker, who in his several-year NFL career, entering his fifth season with the Baltimore Ravens, or actually, yeah, no, excuse me here, entering his fourth season with the Baltimore Ravens, it went 97 for 108 in his career in field goal tries. 89.8% is the completion there. Also, in extra points rate, 110 for 110. Perfection there at the extra points. Now, let me ask you this, though. Do you think that number will change in 2015? Do you think it'll alter for a kicker like Tucker, especially in this year coming up?
No, it will not. I mean, a 30-yard field goal is pretty much automatic for a professional kicker. So I just can't see it to where it changes it that much. I mean, I remember when Matt Stover had that consecutive extra point streak, and I'm just saying, huh. So that's a thing, huh? I figured extra points were automatic for all field goal kickers in the NFL. If you can't kick a field goal from the 2-yard line, what are you doing in the big leagues there, bro?
Well, Tucker was not a fan once he heard the news of the extra point rule change. He said, quote, "What if I slipped and doinked it off the upright? Then we don't go and win the Super Bowl. It's as simple as that." And he also would say something else like, "I think the idea is to add excitement to every single play, but really what it does is make every kicker's job a little bit harder," as said Tucker, who already has a tough job. So we play in the AFC North and we play almost every single game outside. This is a tough division to play football in general. It takes maybe a little bit more mental toughness than playing in a dome 10 games a year. Your thoughts on his comments there?
Well, I mean, if you see it to where it moves it back to the 15-yard line, you got the Super Bowl on the line, and you kick and you're doing it off the uprights, and instead of tying the game, you lose the game. Yeah, that could be a little bit of a game changer. And it's like, see, they were right in changing the rules right there, and it makes a big difference. It's more like along the lines of just pushing something an inch. Like you're rearranging your living room, and the only thing that you do is push your couch an inch to the left. That's pretty much what it seems to be for me.
Tucker also added, "For me, it just means I get more field goals in games. The only difference is it's a 33-yard field goal worth 1 point. That's how I'm going to look at it." So I guess you can look at his argument there and say, well, he does have a point considering it's a 33-yard field goal try for just 1 point on the scoreboard. But at the same token, this is an NFL that is now being criticized for being too offensive-minded, too many points. Too many points, no defense needed. Well, now that you're putting the extra point tries at the 15-yard line, I do think you're giving defenses a shot to try to make a big play on a 33-yard field goal extra point try there. But in retrospect, though, you have many good kickers in the NFL. You have Justin Tucker, you have Robbie Gould, Adam Vinatieri, you also have Steven Gostkowski. I think it's not going to change a whole lot for players of that caliber. But at the same time, I do think you are going to see a couple of games be impacted by this rule change. It may not happen in the first week. It may not happen in the second week. But I do think come week 10, week 11, week 12 maybe, it may make a difference in that team either getting a game to lead the division or inching towards a wild card spot.
Possibly. Time for 2-minute rants. Josh, you will be going first this week. Do the honors there, sir.
Alrighty here. I just wanted to start off by saying I, Joshua Hall, am not a role model. Much like Charles Barkley once said many years ago, I am not a role model. Well, Charles Barkley, once again, who is no stranger to the tabloids when it comes to saying anything controversial or anything that will trigger immediate response, went off on one Golden State Warriors star basketball player, Steph Curry. Not for what he did on the court, but more so what he did off the court. This past weekend, Steph Curry brought his little daughter, Riley, to a post-game press conference and pretty much let his daughter become the highlight of that press conference. And during this time here, reporters were trying to focus on Steph Curry's quotes, but at the same time needed a little bit of a laughter, a little bit of cheer of a young, innocent child just roaming around the press conference, wondering who are all these people with cameras and recorders and why are they talking to my daddy. But Charles Barkley had a different approach to this whole thing. He said, "Reporters are there trying to do their job. I don't think it's a big deal, but I would prefer players not bring their kids. Reporters are trying to do their job." Barkley also went on to say, "I would never have brought my daughter to a press conference personally." Although his co-host Shaquille O'Neal also had a comment saying, "If that man wants to bring his baby to the office, he can." But looking at what Charles Barkley had to say about the whole thing, I personally believe that, yes, it's not so much a role model issue of Steph Curry bringing his daughter to the game, but I do think sometimes we need a break from the average boring press conferences, and we need something interesting to talk about, and this is what happened. Now, whether Steph Curry did this on purpose or whether he couldn't find a babysitter at that time was a totally different story. However, I certainly enjoyed it. It was great television, and for once, it was innocent television.
If your name is Steph Curry, though, how are you having trouble finding a babysitter, though?
That is very true. But
I'm not sure, but speaking of athletes not being role models, more of an example of that. Ray McDonald. This is how you don't do it, okay? Ray McDonald got off on a domestic violence charge last August. He was among the topics that people were talking about with the whole Ray Rice scandal going on. People were asking about, well, what about Ray McDonald? What about Greg Hardy? What about Adrian Peterson? Ray McDonald was a part of that conversation that was going on with everybody in the NFL and the domestic violence controversy that they were having, so to speak. They're still trying to clean up the mess from. But Ray McDonald, he got exonerated from his one domestic violence charge, then got charged with a rape in December. Eventually, those charges were dismissed. He ended up suing his accuser. But now, over the Memorial Day weekend, a new domestic violence charge surfaces. And this one involves child endangerment as well. According to many reports, McDonald allegedly struck his victim while she was holding a baby. Okay? That right there, you have that cloud over your head. With multiple domestic violence charges in the rape investigation, where there is smoke, there is fire. And the Chicago Bears just said, "We want none of this fire." They immediately released Ray McDonald almost as soon as the story broke on Memorial Day. It was like right there. Ray McDonald gets charged with domestic violence and he's gone. Just like that. Just gone out the window, just like that. Where NFL teams are trying to distance themselves from this negative clout that has run over their shoulder of just bad apples in the locker room. If you think about it, though, in the NFL, the arrest rate for NFL players is lower than that of the general arrest rate in America. But because of how high profile the league is, when somebody gets in trouble and the fact that we are in the offseason right now, just Ray McDonald, bad timing on your part, just a really bad decision. And just overall, just in terms of being a role model, you, sir, are definitely not one. Remember, parents, athletes are not role models.
Not to go off topic on the Ray McDonald thing here, but it just boggles my mind that, and I'm not, and once again, before I make these comments, I'm not defending what Ray Rice did back last year. I'm not defending it at all. But looking at the spectrum of what Greg Hardy was accused of and now what Ray McDonald is accused of, how Ray Rice still has not received an NFL contract is beyond me. And how Ray McDonald had all these chances that NFL teams were willing to take on him, even though he seems like more of a bad apple. Ray Rice is not innocent by any means, but he looks like a choir boy compared to what Ray McDonald and Greg Hardy did. It just still baffles me.
But. Yeah, but I believe that Ray Rice is going to get signed just a little bit before training camp. Remember, it's the way the news cycle works in the NFL. They are in the offseason, but they still want you to talk about them. They still want to generate some type of buzz. So there you have it, to where it's like, okay, they before the draft, the deflate gate happens. Then after the draft, we decide this is what's going on with the suspensions, everything that's happening. You're talking about that for a little bit. Right before training camp, you're going to have it to where Ray Rice gets signed by an NFL team. People are going to be like buzzing around like, huh? What? What's going on here? Either he gets signed by an NFL team before training camp or a couple weeks after the season begins. I think that's what's going to happen with one Ray Rice.
Before we close the show out, we want to send out congratulations to the Maryland Athletic Program, the Maryland Women's Lacrosse Team, your 2015 national champions in lacrosse. The men, national runner-up, they just got smoked by Denver. Denver has a good team this year.
How the West was won.
How the West was won, indeed. Also, congratulations to the Maryland baseball team on having a solid year. Made it to the Big Ten Finals. Didn't win, but finds himself in a favorable seed in the 2015 national tournament for the title there. So, pretty exciting times at College Park. You had that mixed along with the high expectations for the Maryland men's basketball team going into the 2015-16 season. You also have some high expectations now of a new quarterback prospect for the Maryland football program there. So, exciting times at College Park. But real quick, Ray, what are we talking about next week?
Talk about the Orioles at least getting 5 wins.
I think they're going to get at least 5 wins. They are going to get at least 5 wins. If not, they are in trouble. They need to get Wieters and Scope off the DL fast. Talk Stanley Cup and NBA Finals, right?
Yeah, I might be talking about you eating paper.
Cavs and Cavs Warriors talk possibly for the NBA championship there.
And hopefully Steph Curry is all right, considering the fact that in his game on Monday, he landed on his neck, so that looked pretty scary. So here's to a speedy recovery for you, sir. And here's to a speedy ending to the Baltimore Sports Free For All. This has been another edition. I'm Ray Atkinson.
I'm Josh Hall.
And we will see you all.
The Baltimore Sports Free For All.